Hey, everybody. Today on Charlie Kirk Show, Tony Busby, lead attorney for Ken Paxton, joins us as we recollect on a grassroots victory. And then Brent Bozell from the Media Research Center, why the media is not trusted. And then a very fun, very, very fun story about Rush Limbaugh at the end of our program. So make sure you listen all the way through. Get involved with the nation's most important movement in the country, TPUSA.com. That is TPUSA.com. Start a high school or college chapter today at TPUSA.com. Email me, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the Loan Experts I Trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. Joining us now is Tony Busby, who is the lead attorney for Ken Paxton and his successful effort, who has now been acquitted. Tony, thank you for joining us. Tony, walk us through what the last couple of weeks have been, which culminated in a victory. Walk us through it.
Well, it's been high drama. You know, the House Board of Managers, the House of Representatives brought charges back in May that they voted on. It took them about 4 hours. And it was based on hearsay upon hearsay. In fact, none of the witnesses that this was all based upon ever were put under oath. So this, for about 3 months, with a gag order in place, Attorney General Paxton and his wife, Senator Paxton, were accused of all kinds of things that we could not even rebut in the press. And of course, the liberal press was in the hip pocket of the House managers. And so finally, 2 weeks ago, we were able to do an opening statement and tell our side of the story. And even though Attorney General Paxton had been essentially convicted in the press, once they called their first witness under oath and that witness was cross-examined, it all fell apart. It crumbled like a cookie and Ken Paxton was acquitted.
So walk us through some of the players here, Dade Phelan, the Bush insiders. For our national audience that aren't as familiar with insider ball, Texas politics, walk us through some of the players and why Ken Paxton, in your estimation, did they target?
Well, you know, the Bush family has controlled Texas politics for a long time. Ken Paxton has been an anti-establishment guy. He has been fighting very hard against not only Obama administration, but also, of course, the Biden administration. And they thought they finally had him. And the interesting thing, and I thought what was most telling, was the so-called whistleblowers. And remember, to be a whistleblower, you have to have a good faith belief that a crime had occurred. Well, these so-called whistleblowers admitted under oath that they had no evidence of any crime. And on the day that they went to the FBI, George P. Bush reactivated his law license. And one thing people should know is that Ken Paxton ran against George P. Bush in the Republican primary and beat him 68-32. Yep. And we thought that had ended the George Bush or the Bush hierarchy in the state of Texas. Well, they came back again in a different way. And this time it was this impeachment. And so on the very day that these so-called whistleblowers went to the FBI without any evidence of any crime, but made all these allegations that led to this impeachment, George P. Bush reactivated his law license, hoping that he would be the next attorney general. And here's the interesting part. All of these so-called whistleblowers, who are nothing more than disgruntled ex-staffers who made complaints against their boss with no evidence to the FBI, they were all represented by an individual named Johnny Sutton. Johnny Sutton, of course, was the appointed U.S. attorney by George Bush and was working for 3 years after we cross-examined these whistleblowers, working for free. So the whole thing stunk to high heaven. The whole thing was an orchestration of a house that was in line with the Bush family. Of course, the Democrats jumped in as well, and it was all exposed on national TV when the first witness was actually put under oath and actually cross-examined.
Yeah, and you did a fabulous job of that. I want to build this out even further, though. We have cut 19 here, but I think I'm not sure how long it is. Let's play cut 19. This is the clip that went viral.
They figured out real quickly once they talked to Maxwell that, you know what? We don't have anything. We need to beef this up. We don't have anything. And even though it's been 3 years, they still don't have anything. And 17 lawyers over there working since May, $500 an hour for each of them. Hundreds of thousands of dollars wasted, taxpayer money wasted, and they still don't have anything. How did this happen? Well, they made some assumptions.
They made some assumptions, and you go on to say the Bush regime ends today. Talk about how this really was the grassroots versus the oligarchs. The people wanted Ken Paxton.
There's no doubt. Ken Paxton won his last election with 4.2 million votes. The grassroots are behind Ken Paxton. The people in the House that are aligned with the Bush family were against Ken Paxton. They did not like the fact that Ken Paxton dispatched George P. Bush by an overwhelming majority. So this was their effort. And it may have succeeded. They had 100 lawyers on the other side. They were backed by millions of dollars, lobbyist dollars, pushing to beat Ken Paxton, who's anti-establishment and anti the old guard. And I am so proud to have been a part of it. I am so proud when they called that first witness and he was put under oath, and you could tell with his shaking voice that he didn't have a whole lot there. And when he started answering cross-examined questions, he crumbled like a cookie on the stand, and you could just feel it. You could feel it in that Senate chamber. You could feel that everybody watching had seen what had happened, and everybody saw this for what it was, which was a complete sham.
So going into this, now that the Bush people are rewriting history, they say, oh, we knew all along it would be tough. No. They thought they could get this done, right? They didn't waste their time or their money. Kind of add some color to that, because now they're rewriting history. Walk us through that.
Yeah, they talked about the legitimacy of this process, that this was going to be a just process, that the impeachment was correct, that it was supported by more evidence. You're going to see all the evidence. And then when it fell apart, now they're trying to delegitimize or make the process illegitimate. And that was a just and that was a fair trial. I can tell you the first vote, we tried to get the entire thing dismissed. And we only were able to get 6 votes. But once the evidence came in and once the lack of evidence on the prosecution side became clear, it fell apart. And now what we hear from the very same people who brought this case against Ken Paxton is, well, the whole process was fixed from the beginning. And this is what we're up against. I mean, this could happen to anybody. This could happen to anybody, that they could cook up charges. And we even had documents in the whistleblower's own writing saying we're going to cook up charges. And once people saw that, the grassroots saw that, people got angry, as they should. I was angry as well. You can tell in that video, I was angry that Ken Paxton, our attorney general, was put through this, and that his wife, Senator Angela Paxton, was put through this. And the good news is justice prevailed.
Yes, it did. Let's play another piece of tape here. Here was the one that I was looking for previously. Play cut 13.
And there is no doubt, there have been hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of articles about Ken Paxton and how bad Ken Paxton is. Everybody has heard it. And guess what? The voters heard it, too. And guess what? Ken Paxton won hands down, resounding victory. He beat the latest in line for the Bushes. Let it be known. Let it be clear now. The Bush era in Texas ends today.
Is it fair to say the Bush cabal is weaker than at any time because of this loss?
I give all credit to Ken Paxton. I think so. I think this puts an end, I hope, to the Bush regime in Texas.
That's a big deal. For 10 years, Patriot Mobile has been America's only Christian conservative wireless provider. When I say only, trust me, they're the only one. Glenn and the team have been great supporters of mine and Turning Point USA, which is why I'm proud to partner with them. Patriot Mobile offers dependable nationwide coverage, giving you the ability to access all three major networks, which means you get the same coverage you've been accustomed to without funding the left. When you switch to Patriot Mobile, you're sending the message that you support free speech, religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, and our military veterans and first responder heroes. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Keep your number, keep your phone, or upgrade. Their team will help you find the best plan for your needs. Just go to patriotmobile.com/Charlie or call 878-PATRIOT. Free activation when you say offer code Charlie. Join me today and make the switch today to this excellent company. Go to patriotmobile.com/Charlie. That is patriotmobile.com/Charlie or call 878-PATRIOT. So, Tony, what is the lesson here then for grassroots conservatives? When the regime comes after you, hold the line. It would have been very easy for Ken just to bow out, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and that's one of the things I said in the closing is what they hoped he would do, what they expected he would do, was quit. And but he has a stronger backbone than that. And I can tell you the grassroots, their calls, their letters, their emails, their texts, they made a difference. They made a real difference. They were heard. I think they were heard by the jury. They certainly were heard by our legal team. It motivated us. It gave us strength to fight through this.
Let's go to cut 12, please.
The burdens of proof. Look at the burdens of proof, senators. If you decided this case from the Houston Chronicle, the Texas Tribune, Texas Monthly, the Dallas Morning News, oh, my goodness gracious, Ken Paxton's guilty. But there ain't no evidence to support it. The only evidence we have in this case is they don't like Ken Paxton.
So how is it then, just help me understand, that a Republican House in the state of Texas with such weak evidence decided to proceed? This is a mockery to the whole country. This is a humiliation for the state of Texas.
Shocking. It was shocking. We knew from the beginning that they had never placed a witness under oath. We knew from the beginning that they had some investigators who went out and spoke to only 15 witnesses and collected no documents. And then those investigators went to the House committee and testified, but were not placed under oath. And we knew there was nothing to support this. And then you may recall that the hearing where they recommended impeachment lasted only 4 hours. And I think the reason that they sped that up and the reason that they went forward with this is because the Speaker of the House was embarrassed by Ken Paxton, because the Speaker of the House appeared to be drunk running the state's business. And Ken Paxton called him out in a public statement. And so they sped this up and they as I've called it, they took a long walk on a short pier. They had already went too far and it was too late to turn back. And that's the case with the House that brought these charges and also with these so-called whistleblowers. And so what they put us in a position of doing is not only defending ourselves in the press with a gag order in place, but also cross-examining witnesses who had a lot of allegations and supposition and guesswork, but no evidence. The good news is it turned out the way it should have turned out. The process worked. But the point is, it should have never happened. And I think Lieutenant Governor's comments after the trial, where he blasted the House and said, this should never happen, and we're going to amend the Texas Constitution, I think that speaks volumes.
So there are some whispers that are being leaked to the Associated Press that the Department of Justice is now going to take over and continue their assault against Ken Paxton. Is there anything you can share with that? It looks like it's an unrelenting blitzkrieg against Ken Paxton.
I hope that's not true, because anybody that watched the trial and saw the witnesses that the federal government, the DOJ, would have to rely upon would see that they have no evidence and that they do not stand up to cross-examination. I think what you're hearing is just a bunch of sour grapes from the press corps that thought that they had gotten Ken Paxton. And not only did they not get Ken Paxton, he's stronger than ever and is ready to do his work.
Tony Busby, and you're running for city council. Tell us about that really quick.
Now, I'm running in a district G, which generates 37% of the revenues in the city of Houston, but only gets about 10% of the benefits. Houston is becoming more and more unsafe. We have more than 1,000 busted water mains across the city. And we need somebody who's an advocate, who stands up and is all about good government. And that's the reason I'm running. And I'm looking forward to working for the residents of the city of Houston.
Tony Busby, great work. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Hey, everybody. Charlie Kirk here. Do you know that the average American spends about 20 years in retirement? That's a long time to live without a steady income. We want to make sure you enjoy every moment of it and don't outlive your money. Retirement is about more than just investments. It's about living your best life. Let's not retire. Let's pivot. My friends at Pax Financial Group developed a course for the sole purpose of helping you pivot. If you want your own free guide of pivoting into the next chapter of life with purpose, visit paxfg.com/charlie. That is paxfg.com/charlie. I have some of my money managed by Pax Financial. They do a wonderful job. And remember, retirement is about more than just investments. The Charlie Kirk endorsement of the Pax Financial Group LLC was given for compensation, which creates an incentive to recommend Pax's advisory services. You need to make sure that disclaimer is very clear. So check it out, paxfg.com/charlie. Brent Bozell is with us. Brent, good to see you.
Thank you for having me. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, Media Research Center. First, tell us about that, and then let's get started.
All right, so the MRC was founded, good Lord, 35 and a half years ago, because I believed that the media, the liberal media, were the most powerful arm of the left in America today, the most consequential anyway. But that's when the media were liberal. What we've seen happen in the last 5 years is a transformation. This is a media that's gone hard far left. And I spent 30 years debating the media that denied they have a bias. Note that nobody denies it anymore. Note that nobody suggests they don't have a bias anymore. It's indefensible to suggest that they don't have a bias.
And you guys do a wonderful job of exposing it. And from a factual perspective, it's really remarkable. I want to talk about this Meet the Press. There's a new host of Meet the Press, Kristen Welker. Yeah. And this is part of something that we call the Trump paradox, which is that there's a portion of the media that says do not platform Trump at all. But another portion that says, wait, we need ratings. We have to pay the bills. So they're kind of in this tension point of do we platform Trump or do we not platform Trump? Let's play a little tease from Meet the Press. If you haven't seen it, it's a very entertaining interview. Play cut 15.
92% of the Democrats don't want to see abortion after a certain period of time.
If a federal ban landed on your desk, if you were reelected, would you sign it at 15?
Are you talking about a complete ban?
A ban at 15 weeks?
Well, people are starting to think of 15 weeks. That seems to be a number that people are talking about right now.
Would you sign that?
I would sit down with both sides and I'd negotiate something, and we'll end up with peace on that issue for the first time in 52 years. I'm not going to say I would or I wouldn't. I mean, DeSantis is willing to sign a 5-week and 6-week ban.
Would you support that? You think that's
I think what
far?
He did is a terrible thing and a terrible mistake.
So I don't want to get into the abortion thing too much, but that's going viral. Brent, your thoughts? Media versus Trump, they need him.
Isn't it funny, though? You know, they were apoplectic with themselves during the 2016 campaign because it was all Trump all the time. I've never seen in my life someone command the media attention the way that he did. He's a master, an absolute master. They were going crazy, but they had to cover him because of the ratings. It's so good for the ratings. So what's happened is since 2020, they have said to themselves, look, we've got to take the high road. And the high road means banning him from being on television.
Right.
Which, you know, begs the question, who the hell are they? I mean, these are supposed to be news reporters, not passing judgment on who is worthy and who isn't. This guy is the presumptive nominee of the Republican Party.
Right.
How in the world do they have any right whatsoever? And so they are very upset anytime he gets on the air. But guess what? When he gets on the air, he dominates the news.
And it's this ongoing paradox. You saw this with CNN, right? CNN did with Caitlin Collins town hall, and then Licht gets fired or resigns almost completely after. The rank and file of these news agencies say we cannot give him oxygen. We cannot give him a platform.
This is the media. I agree with Mark Levin. This is a neo-Marxist news media. They will not tolerate. When was the last time, Charlie? When was the last time you were on national television? When was the last time that they invited you?
Never.
When was the last time? Well, yeah. Now you have got one of the largest, most consequential organizations in the United States of America. When was the last time they interviewed Mark Levin, who can sell a million hardback books?
That's right.
But yet they'll never put him on television. They won't allow conservative speech. They don't want conservative speech to be allowed. We are finding ways in which the left is doing this, which is frightening. We're going to be coming out with a report. We already came out with one report showing how the Dayton University, how the Justice Department
were involved in that.
This is how the radical left believes. They believe that the conversation we're having right now ought not to be allowed. They truly do believe this. So Donald Trump going on television is something they believe ought not to be happening because, by God, his ideas might get out there.
Yes, that's right. And so trust in the media is at an all-time low. Can you just give us some perspective, Brent, over the last decade, how consumption of information has changed?
Well, because we first of all, when the news media have a trust rating lower than Congress, you know they're in trouble.
So what is the number exactly?
I think the last time I saw it was 17 or something like that.
Wow,
it makes
that's
you wonder who likes them. Used car dealers have better reputations than the news media do. Now why? Well, you know, here's an interesting dynamic, Charlie. We're going from the news era. We're leaving the news era, mm-hmm. and we're going into the information age. You no longer, 9 out of 10 people no longer wait for the newspaper in the morning to be delivered to see the news or wait till 6:30 in the evening. They pick up this thing and they look for the information.
That's right.
They look for information, not news. If you survey young people and ask them where they get their news, they get it from Facebook. That's where they're getting the news. So you've got the networks are still very, very powerful in that they can create the narrative. And I'll argue that, you know, a lot of people will argue that the elections were or weren't stolen in 2020 at the ballot box. But I can argue, and I can argue with scientific certainty,
yes,
that the media stole the 2020 elections.
So your organization, the Media Research Center, had the conclusive piece of data, and it was about the Hunter Biden laptop.
This is,
I think, 10 out of 10. Walk us through it.
Well, it was actually 5 or 6 different questions, but here's what we did. We looked at all the battleground states. We looked at here in Arizona, Nevada, Georgia, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan. And we asked a series of questions of Biden's voters. These were questions we knew had not been covered by the news media because we track all these things. We asked, for example, did they know that Kamala Harris had a voting record to the left of Bernie Sanders, the socialist? And we looked at it was like 48% or whatever. And then we asked them, would you have voted for Joe Biden had you known this? And we took that number, whatever it might be, 5.2%, and we put it across those states. And Donald Trump would have won Arizona, Nevada, Georgia, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. Then we asked the same question. Did you know that America was oil energy independent? 50% of Democrats had no idea. Did you know that Donald Trump had been nominated or recommended for 3 Nobel Peace Prizes?
Wow.
Did you know 11 million jobs have been created in 2 months? Did you know that GDP in the last quarter was 30%? 30% GDP. So we asked those series of questions, but here was the big one. We asked, did you know about the Hunter Biden laptop story? Now, here's what's important about this, Charlie. Conservatives, all conservatives believe, well, everybody knew about this. Everybody knew about the laptop. Well, when you ask Biden's voters, 49.1% had never heard of Hunter Biden. I'll get to why in a second. 41.9% had never heard about it. Then we asked, would you have voted for Joe Biden had you known? 9.4% of Biden's voters wouldn't have voted for him. So what would have happened? Arizona, Nevada, Georgia, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, all the battleground states would have gone to Trump in a landslide. He would have won at least 317 electoral votes. And that's, we just polled the battleground states. He would have taken some of the blue states as well. At least 317 electoral votes. It would have been an absolute landslide. Had they only, Charlie, we're just talking about them reporting the news.
And think about in 2016, they almost kind of reported the news of the Hillary Clinton laptop. And I think they swore a blood oath. We're never doing that again.
Oh, yeah,
We're never doing any sort of negative press. The last 90 days of an election, we are not going to cover a scandal. There's no more October surprises.
If a tree falls in a forest and there's an October surprise, no one to cover it, did it actually happen?
Yes. One of the things that we knew for a fact, take the Hunter Biden story. You know that ABC, NBC, and CBS completely buried it. Why? Because we covered these things. We showed it was a matter of seconds that they gave and rejected it. We know that Twitter censored it because when Elon Musk took over, he found that out. And then Mark Zuckerberg admitted that the Justice Department went to him and called it Russian collusion and told them not to cover it. Now, Charlie, people should go to prison for this. When the Justice Department is that weaponized that they are going to Facebook and telling them not to cover a story that they know is going to hurt Joe Biden, mm-hmm. people should have gone to prison for that. So we know it wasn't covered at all. But here's the terrible thing, Charlie, and conservatives better be recognize something. It's happening all over again, right before our very eyes. You and I know lots of things going on in this administration, and your viewers know everything we know that's going on about all the bribery and all that kind of stuff. I can guarantee you that probably a majority of Democrats have no idea what we're talking about.
Yeah, and we also live in a police state in addition to that, and the media won't cover the police state.
We really do. We really do. I mean, the Justice Department is so weaponized. You don't dare speak. You know what it is? It's not just that your freedom of speech is being interfered with. It's your freedom of thought. Because when you're going to say something and you think about it, and what's your reaction? What's a lot of people's reaction? I better not say that. I'm going to get myself banned. I better not think that. I better not say that thing about transgenders. I better not say that thing about the Second Amendment. On and on it goes. But we have been looking at some of the studies, some of the stories that are out there that conservatives think are being covered. And Charlie, it's frightening. Hunter Biden or Joe Biden has said unequivocally he's never discussed his business, his son's business deals. Mm-hmm. He said it over and over again. All right. So what was Hunter Biden's partner, Eric Schurman, doing in the White House? What was he doing in there? And it's not just that he went to the White House. He went to the White House 19 times, according to their logs, including one visit with Vice President Joe Biden. Do you think there's any media interest in that? They should be breaking down every door to find out what was he doing there 19 times. Not one single story has been done on this.
Now, there was one person who did do the mainstream media thing, and I don't think they invited him back afterwards. You told me about this story, and I studied it. The only person to ever play the mainstream media like a fiddle, Rush Limbaugh.
Mm-hmm.
You remember?
Yeah.
Let's play cut 30. Rush Limbaugh on 60 Minutes. Then, Brent, I want you to tell the story around this. It's amazing. Play cut 30.
People have called you a sexist.
Right.
People have called you a homophobe.
Right.
Are you?
Oh, of course not. I'm none of those things. I am simply someone who views events in life and comments on them. I have my own version of what's right and wrong.
You've also been called arrogant and pompous.
Well, I call it confidence.
The great Rush Limbaugh. Brent, walk us through this story.
All right. So I was with having dinner with Rush one night, and he said, I've done an interview on 60 Minutes that's going to be coming up. I said, Rush, you did what? And he said, well, 60 Minutes wanted to do an interview. Now, Rush was extraordinarily confident, also very innocent about life. And I said, Professor Rush, this is what I'm going to do. When you find out when it's going to air, also let me know, but also let me know what your favorite Pacific island is. And I'm going to buy you a one-way ticket to it. And you go there and you stay there until everything blows over and then come back. And he said, well, and then he called me some time later. He said, it's going to air this weekend. And I said, Rush, what island do you want to go to? And he said, I don't know. I feel good about this. I think it went well. And I said, oh, God. And they said it went well. And I thought, this is over. You don't know the media like I know the media. So it played. And I've got to tell you how this thing went. It was so wonderful. The first section had to do with Rush's homophobia. And they showed clips of homophobic Rush saying things. And then they went to some gay rights organization that were just apoplectic about him. And then they went back to Rush and they showed him the footage of them being apoplectic. And he started laughing. Then the second one was the feminazis, going after the feminists. And again, they showed clips of him making fun of them. They showed it to some radical feminist organization.
That's right.
She went nuts over it.
And he started laughing.
They showed it back to him. He's laughing even more. And then the third one was the animal rights, where they showed the footage of him playing Born Free with a machine gun in the background. And some animal rights person was just going nuts. And Rush is losing it laughing. Well, what happened? At the end of the day, you saw left and you saw right. You saw the right that could laugh and have fun, and the left with no sense of humor whatsoever. It was an out-of-the-park home run for Rush Limbaugh.
And that, I don't want to say that put him on the map, but they tried to ruin his career with that interview, and it had the opposite effect.
They did, and they tried. You know, they never understood this. There was a reporter, Bill Raspberry, a columnist for the Washington Post, very, very left-wing, who did, I think, one of the greatest services he did for his newspaper. He wrote a piece just slamming Rush. Just really, really bad. And then about a month later, he wrote a second piece. And in the second piece, he acknowledged he'd never listened to Rush before. He was just going by what everybody was telling him. And he then, after he wrote it, decided to listen to Rush. And he said, and I'm paraphrasing, Rush, I don't agree with anything you say, but I apologize for everything I said because it wasn't true. So good for him, for that man, for having done that. Most people who attack, who savage Rush, never listened to his show once, but they couldn't stand the fact that he could laugh at them and enjoy it so much.
And the typical rules of the media did not apply to Rush.
No, they didn't. Rush just knew how to handle the media better than anybody else did. And he was always, you know, he never wavered. He never ever compromised his principles, not once. And you know the greatest story about him that's never been told? He had every challenger under the sun. He had thousands of people he was competing with for over 30 years. And for 30 years, he was number one in the country. No one was even close. And I believe when he passed, he was bigger than when he was first number one 30 years before.
I believe it. It's incredible. Well, we miss Rush. That's for there. That is a
one of the, and you know what? And to be with him privately, people don't believe this. He was the most humble person you ever met. And there wasn't a bit of falsehood in that. When he came back, when he had his drug issue, and he came back from his drug issue, his first public event was with me at one of our galas, and he got a massive standing ovation. When he came off the stage, he looked at me almost teary eyed and he said, Brent, they gave me a standing ovation. You couldn't believe he would get that.
Amazing. Brent Bozell, thank you for that.
Thank you, Charlie.
Thanks for having me. Email us freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.